So the museum was set up 150 years ago.
150 years ago, yeah. The idea was to store the university's scientific collections, which had been in the old Ashmolean Museum. Things like the dodo, but also William Buckland's collection of fossils and things like that. The idea was to actually use it as a centre for science teaching. So you can see the rooms, well, you see above the doors. Professor of geometry, astronomy, we've got chemistry, we've got anatomy. They originally, you know, used this place to cut people up and that sort of thing.
So was it originally designed for public visitors?
Yes, it was. Here we are in Victorian times, and the typical visitors are dressed in the long dresses, morning suits and academic dress. It was clearly a upper middle class clientele visiting in those days.
And they would have been paying admission charges?
And they paid sixpence
right.
to get in those days. Although these days it is free entrance.
And it has been free for...
At least a century.
At least a century,
yes,
so.
Yes. The architects were... Was Woodward, who was an Irishman. And a lot of the sculptors were Irish labourers as well. Yeah, over here is one of the stonemasons that worked on sculpture in the in stone around the museum. Here is carving one of the windows, and you can see he's carved a series of cats going around. You'll notice here on the capitals on top of these columns, you've got various foliage. That was also carved by Irish stonemasons who used to go down to the botanical gardens every morning and bring back huge handfuls of various plant material so that they could carve it as accurately as possible. That's partly due to the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood and Ruskin link.
So they were involved in the design of the,
yes.
of the building?
Yes. Yes, Ruskin is supposed to have visited regularly while they were actually building it.
So were they very interested in science and bringing science to the public?
Yes, I think so. Oh, definitely. I mean, that was a Victorian thing that people did want to. I mean, science was new in those days. I mean, Geological Society, 1807. This wasn't too long afterwards.
And it's all part, I suppose, of the Pre-Raphaelite interest in
yes.
portraying things very accurately and
yes.
closely to how they are in the real world.
Truth to nature. Ackland was the professor who was mainly involved in the project to build it. He also insisted that his labourers knew what was going on scientifically, so he provided a library for them on one afternoon off a week to study geology and botany. This is university at different times. That's 1870. We've kept the traditional design of the cabinets of glass and oak. And some places we've actually cleaned up the ironwork to actually show the true colours, because it is beautifully painted.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Coming through into the 20th century, we've got much the same design, it's the same objects, and that sort of thing.
So it stayed quite traditional,
yes,
really, in
absolutely.
The design.
Absolutely. Here we are in 1968, in my time, and it's looking very much like it did in 1870. Hardly changed. And it's only in the last 10, 15 years that we've totally redone the displays and made them much more modern.
But the cabinets are still
accessible.
Of the same sort of style.
Well, yeah, exactly. We've insisted on doing that and keeping the
That's
the
quite important to the...
Oh, yes, it is, yes.
So have you got sort of events going on around the 150th
yes,
anniversary?
Yes, we have. We've a series of lectures by people like Richard Dawkins and David Attenborough. So one of the things that when we apply for funding is we often put some money in that funding application to acquire objects.
I'm Derek Civiter. I'm Professor of Earth Sciences in the University Museum of Natural History and also curator of the geological collections here. The exhibition is about the Chenjiang fauna or biota, which is about 525 million years old. So that's some 10 million years or so earlier than the Burgess Shale. Essentially, it's a Chinese Burgess Shale. It's important for two reasons. One, that it bears witness to that great benchmark in the history of life, the Cambrian explosion event, when many of the major groups which go on to dominate global marine and eventually terrestrial biodiversity to the present day first appear in the fossil record. And also it's important because it has the preservation of soft tissues. And by that, I don't obviously mean the soft tissues themselves, but the soft tissues have been replaced by pyrites, so by fool's gold. So the slightly darker pyrite comes out very well against the finer pale mudstone.
Right.
So the fossils are beautifully preserved, and you can see various features in great detail. So not only do we have this wonderful diversity of fossils very early on in the rock record, but also we have many forms which otherwise wouldn't be preserved were it not for these preservation conditions.
So that's presumably been really useful for sort of filling in the gaps of
many features associated with individual fossils we would be unaware of, and indeed in some cases whole animals which are composed in almost entirely of soft tissue would be lost, so to speak, to the fossil record unless we had this type of deposit.
So is there a reason why this material in particular was so well preserved? Something specific about the place?
Well, all these exceptional preservation horizons have a particular set of chemical, physical and biological circumstances attached to them, and they're not all the same in all of the localities and through the geological column. Iron was important here, so there was a lot of iron in the sediment, and the sulfur was sourced from the decay of the soft tissues. So the combination of the two means you end up with pyrites, iron sulfide. And here you can see worms being preserved.
Yeah.
Curled up. That one looks rather like a Catherine wheel.
Yeah.
Here we have another worm preserved just as though it died almost yesterday, with the various segments of the worm clearly indicated. And also you can see in the centre of the worm the remains of the gut. Truly remarkable preservation. One wouldn't normally expect a worm like this to be preserved for more than a day or two, perhaps even hours. We know that there are primitive fish around in the Chen Yangtze. In fact, it boasts the earliest vertebrate in the world. So the earliest generally recognised vertebrate is found here within this Chen Yang horizon. And that's part of this exhibition. We have two beautiful specimens of the earliest fish.
So how were these originally found? Was it?
It was originally found by Professor He Jiangguang, who was doing a piece of basic geological research.
That was in 1984?
In 1984, yeah. And he was then based in the Academy of Sciences in Nanjing. He went out to collect bradawrids. Bradawrids are very small. In fact, we can see some along here. However, He Jiangguang didn't find a soft-bodied bradawrid to begin with. What he found was a soft-bodied arthropod. Here's the soft-bodied arthropod that he found. It's a specimen of Naroya, and some people think Naroya is a trilobite. Other people think that Naroya is an arthropod. Here's the head, here's the conjoined body and the tail. And if you see, there have been various sedimentary layers finely picked away here, and underneath we have traces of the appendages. And it was this specimen which gave He Jiangguang the indication that the sediments in the Chanyang area could give rise to something rather, rather special. He collected more specimens that day, and so he's often related. By nightfall, he collected several soft-bodied forms, and he was very excited about it, so much so that he hardly got to sleep that night, apparently. Here again is another example of the remarkable preservation in this fauna. We can see a sea gooseberry. There are 100 or so species of sea gooseberry present day in modern oceans. So to get a sea gooseberry preserved, which is just like a lump of jelly,
over
this length of time, is something special. If you were to ask me for my highlights, the arthropods, the sea gooseberry, the vertebrates, the lobopods. But of course there are others as well.
And is this only a very small percentage of the overall specimens, or is this mostly all of it?
There are, of course, certain elements which we failed to get here. But we have, I think it's fair to say, all the major groups and the major elements of the fauna here to see.
So in terms of how it's changed over 150 years then, it seems like a lot of the planning has been keeping it the same. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, the aisles of skeletons and that sort of things were there at the beginning.
So I guess the biggest change is the people who come and visit.
Absolutely, yeah. Since in 1990, we had 100,000 visitors a year. Now we have over 500,000.
Wow.
Five times as many. But we do get people from everywhere. And we do have outreach programs where we actually go into the local community and involve them.
So are there any plans for things being developed in the future?
Yes. Oh, yes, it'll go on. It always does. I mean, with these... many of these displays, we're working on a 25-year life cycle. But that said, you know, some of them we're not happy with and we'll probably replace them in the next 2 or 3 years. We've got a new director coming in October, so things will change a little. But, well, that has been a big focus over the last 10 years, improving our displays and attracting new audiences.